Hello there, you're listening to Audacity, the Authentic Entrepreneur Podcast, especially for female founders. I'm your host, Claire Akers. In this space, you'll hear me talk about anything and everything you need to build an authentic and aligned business that's capable of changing the world. I'm a mum of three, entrepreneur and founder of two businesses so far, and an authenticity coach since 2007. Most importantly, I'm a cheerleader for those of you who have been brave and audacious enough to risk it all, follow your heart and build a business. So welcome to the Audacity Podcast. I'm so glad you're here and let's dive in to the episode. Today, I am delighted to be sitting down with Lisa and Saskia from The Biscuery. We have been in each other's worlds for a little while now, haven't we? And when I came to The Biscuery the other day, I jumped at the chance to get you on the podcast because I am so, so interested in just having a chat about your entrepreneurial story and your journey. So let's dive straight into it. Could you, either as a tag team or individually, just give us a little bit of background as to your story and how you got to be where you are as co-founders of The Biscuery?
There's a few little bits to our story that we like to mention. The one is that we're both not from Leeds. We're both not from the UK. We came to the UK 12 and 11 years ago, roughly, because our partners are British and we had... I came for a job opportunity in a digital marketing agency, and that's where I met Saskia. So she started a little bit before me. And the next kind of parallel in our lives is that we had young kids or we had babies, and we felt a little bit disillusioned by the what was lying ahead, the whole juggling babies with an office job that was okay, it was a good company, but it wasn't really what we maybe had envisioned for our lives. I have no family support nearby, so it was also just that dropping the child, rushing to work, and essentially my baby being in care of strangers all day long. And it was just like, this is just, I'm not sure I can do this. So we decided to add another layer of, well, not stress, but work to our lives, which was starting a market stall, because we became friends over a shared love of baking and eating baked goods. So we just started experimenting, baked the recipes we missed from our home countries and started selling them at little farmers markets. And maybe you want to talk about how that pivoted.
So I want to hear about the pivot, sorry to interrupt, but first of all there's a question that just jumped straight out of me, which is, so respectively we've got the Netherlands and Germany, yes? What are the baked goods? This is the important question.
Well, most of the stuff, yeah, we don't bake anymore, but anyway, so Germany, it's like red wine cake, Florentines, vanilla kipferl, and the jam biscuits that we still do today, which are to the recipe of Lisa's grandmother. And then from the Netherlands, we've got like speculoos, I think you might be familiar with, in the UK.
Like the lotus biscuit.
Lotus biscuits, indeed. And apple pies. Yeah.
Yes. I am starving. I just shared with you both before we came started to record that I've just come from spin class, and all that talk of baked goods is making my stomach rumble. So apologies. Apologies if we pick up any of that sound on the film.
But we should have sent you a biscuit ahead of this recording. So yeah, Lisa left the story when we started our market stalls in and around Leeds. And like I just said, we were selling cakes, pies, a variety of biscuits, all for people to consume themselves. And it was beautiful, and the feedback that we got was amazing. But what we found was that it wasn't a sustainable product line for us. So we dropped the cakes, we dropped the pies because they were so labor intensive to make and their shelf life was really short, and we stuck with the biscuits. And then what happened is, because we come from a digital marketing background, we launched the business in 2016 with a website, because, you know, that's the way you do. And people started to find us online for biscuits, and we got inquiries about personalizing biscuits. And that's how we really changed into a gifting company, because we were like, okay, so if we personalize the biscuits, either with messages that people can send to their loved ones, or either with branding so that it becomes an asset to businesses, that is actually a more logical step for us time poor working moms, mm-hmm. A route to go down. So that's when we changed our business, and yeah, and then when COVID hit, things changed again.
Yeah. How did the change?
So before COVID, we had moved into the corporate world a lot. So 80% of what we're doing was for businesses, local biscuits mainly. But with corporate events, you know, coming to a halt from one day to the other, we looked at each other and said, that's it. You know, we won't have much to do for the next foreseeable future. But at that point, we didn't have any overheads. We were still baking from home. We had no staff. So it wasn't, you know, a financial pressure. We were just a bit sad that we didn't have a lot to do. So what we did is we wanted to do something, because obviously we were no key workers. We couldn't really help people. We were told to stay at home. But we decided to send out free biscuits with encouraging messages to make people feel more connected. So they just said, miss you, or stay safe. And people could basically send us an email with their little story. And we would then bake the biscuit, handwrite a note, pack it, send it to the person they missed so dearly, or who they were worried about. Like, my sister works on the COVID ward and I'm worried about her, and can you send her that biscuit? So it was really heartfelt messages. We were so touched by all those messages, and we, you know, were still us trying to juggle our work and homeschooling and everything else. But it meant so much to us to do a little something during this time. And that is when our B2C, so our, you know, the offering for individuals, just picked up. Like, I think it quintupled or something. So at a time where the B2B was dead, B2C carried us through. And that's when we kind of said, when also Saskia got made redundant, and then we're like, okay, maybe this is the time now, and we need to give this a go, because if we can actually survive a pandemic, then maybe we've got something here. So I quit my job about two months after Saskia left hers. And we, again, and that's maybe where the business world tells a different story, but we didn't pay ourselves for all this time, you know, like the peanuts, literally, it was like pocket money. So we had a bit of money in the bank for this moment. So we said, you know, we've got enough to hire a small commercial space now. We've got enough to hire a tiny team. And we've got about 6 months to make it work, and then we run out of money. And that's really what we did.
Yeah. So for the first 5 years, really, it was a glorified hobby. Like, I don't think many people know that we worked part-time in day jobs, and you know, we did all this in the evening and weekends.
I love that. And I love that you shared that, because we've spoken about this before offline, but I think it is so, so important for entrepreneurs out there, aspiring entrepreneurs out there, entrepreneurs who are finding it really tough at the moment, to see these kind of role models, in that it isn't just a straightforward path of business idea, investment, watch the company grow. Mm. It can be so scrappy behind the scenes, kind of, and there are so many different ways to grow a business. So I love that you've just shared that was your route and how you did it. Saskia, I wonder if you could share the story. It stuck in my mind that you shared with me previously about the importance of knowing your audience and the selling the apple pie. I think it
was. yeah. Okay. So before we set up the biscuit, I tried a little venture myself, selling apple pies, Dutch apple pies, in Leeds. And the first market that I went to is Leeds Kirkgate Market. And I sold apple pies that were about this big in size. But because they were all handmade, hand cut, like, I mean, it was such a labor of love. I had to sell them for quite a high amount. I think they were about 12, I can't remember, 12 quid a pie. And I went to Leeds Kirkgate Market. And at the time, I was relatively new to Leeds and I didn't really know Leeds that well. I just thought it's somewhere to sell. And we were outside and somebody came over to me and looked at the apple pies, thought they were really good. Then he looked at the price. And in my really butchered Leeds accent, he said, "Love, I could get an apple pie for like 2 quid inside the market." And I was like, I was mortified. I was just like, oh my God, what am I doing here? Like I've brought the wrong product to the wrong place and I'm never going to get rid of all these pies. And then somebody came over to the stall from the market and he said, "Cut your pie up in smaller pieces." So we cut the pies up into pieces of six and we sold all the individual pieces for £2. So 2 times 6 is 12. I still got £12. So people were happy to pay £2 for a slice rather than £12 for the whole. And that was like 1,000 light bulb sales lessons were learned there. Like
I love it. I love
find
that
the right
story.
Market and the right price point.
Yeah, and how to pitch it to the right audience as well. Yeah. It's so interesting, isn't it? But you only learn that by doing, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, you've got to kind of be brave and put yourself out there and learn the lessons, tough as they feel at the time.
Yeah, and it was a valuable lesson for us when we started out together, because obviously Saskia told me that story. So we looked for markets in different areas. So we, you know, we were desperate to get into the Oakwood market. We did the Kirkstall Deli market. Obviously there's always a varied audience, but there were people who could afford a bag of biscuit, you know, to pay £5 for a bag of handmade biscuits. And the other thing, which was, you know, people can say was a challenge for us, but it was also a gift, is that we were mums and we had a job. So we only had so many hours to give the business. So we looked at each other and we said, we have to charge this, otherwise it makes zero sense. So we just have to bake less because we only have so many hours and charge more. And that means we have to cater to a different audience. And that's where the gifting worked so well, because we thought, well, if we put a message on there and it's personalized and people buy it for someone else, they're going to spend more. So it wasn't us going, how can we make the most money? It was our little desperation of like, we only have 3 hours a day max to give to this. How can we squeeze the most out of it? And
yeah. There is nothing as motivated as a working mum. You've got this amount of time and you've got to stop then and pick them up from school or nursery. You know, there's no alternative, is there? So you just get shit done.
Yeah.
You just absolutely
and you
get shit done. Yeah. Yeah. I love
it.
I absolutely love it.
Awesome.
Here's a question that's occurred as you've been telling the story about pivoting. So you've given us some brilliant examples of you being reactive, of listening to the market, of being small and agile enough to pivot when you see which way the wind is blowing. How do you know when it's smart pivoting and when it's kind of flip-flopping and taking away from the vision? Does that make sense as a question?
I think a lot of the decisions that we have made have been intuitive and kind of, you know, intrinsic gut reactions. I'm not, you know, I don't think this is the stuff that anybody in business school will spout about, but Lisa and I aren't, you know, we have no MBA, we have no business backgrounds, we don't come from families that know how you run businesses. So we have always, like Lisa just said, does this work for us still? If no, then what needs to change? And then the flip side of that is, okay, the market is asking us this. Can we do it? If yes, how? And so it's those two sides. It's like we hear from the market, but we also hear from ourselves, and it's, and within that is the decision, and it's not always going to be the right decision.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think the more work you do on yourself, and obviously that's the work you do, and we've worked an incredible amount on ourselves since we started the business, the more you get signposted into those directions by your reactions, your you know, physical reactions to something, or you just might feel really stressed about something that isn't even that stressful, and you're like, why? And I think we've learned to read that and go, it just isn't working for us. It's not what we want to be doing. It's not in line with what we stand for. It's not something we feel proud of. It's not something we want our team to go through. You know, like all these little things that, again, maybe doesn't lead us to big money, but it leads us to how we want to live our lives and, you know, still be at the school gate every day at 3 o'clock. And, you know, you can only grow your business so fast if you work 25 hours a week because you want to be there for your children. And maybe it's a luxury as well that, you know, we can survive with the little money we pay ourselves still. But again, it comes down to what's important to us. And it would definitely unconventional in that way. And we shout about it that, you know, having a business doesn't mean having the fanciest car and growing to 7 figures in the first year. You know, it has so many facets and there's no blueprint.
Yeah. And I remember, especially in the early days, us all the time saying to each other, well, what is the point if we're not building it to what we need? Like, what on earth is the point if we're building another company the same way the blueprints already exist outside? Because we knew that wasn't doing it for us, and it wasn't going to help us in the lives that we were trying to create for ourselves. So we kept coming back to, okay, but it has to work for us.
Yeah.
You know, and that was kind of the jumping off point.
Yeah.
Yeah. It might sound a bit selfish, I don't know, on the back of it, but truly starting a company is not easy, and to sustain it is not easy. And I think the only way you can sustain it is if you make it work for you. I can't see it any other way, unless you're building
totally
it in 3 months, 3 years time and be done with it. But
three years of hell and big check, but again, it's not, doesn't drive me.
totally agree. Like, I share the story all the time of my first business, technology recruitment business, looked amazing on paper. My accountant was really happy with me. Had a decent sized team, had all the client lists, was being invited on the BBC as an expert, all the kind of tick boxes of success, but it was like a golden cage and I was absolutely miserable. And I went back to work when my daughter was 2 weeks old, because I felt like I didn't have a choice, because I was growing what I thought was a successful business, a cookie cutter business, but it just made me absolutely miserable. And that's why, I mean, you've spoken about quite organically some of the pillars of what I teach, which is working with your feminine energy and being able to trust your gut and working in accordance with your values. I think I've heard quite a few of them shining through as you've been talking, but what are yours and the Biscuits values that you work in integrity with?
Kindness,
authenticity,
family friendly,
consciousness, like eco-friendliness.
Yeah, sustainable. And when we say sustainable, we mean holistically sustainable. The environment comes into it, but also the way that we talk to our team, the way that we create jobs for the team, you know, it's really a holistic, sustainable approach.
And how we all work as well. Because I don't think 70-hour works are sustainable. So, you know, the whole being a founder is a lot, being a mother is a lot. So being both is really a lot. So we just need to make sure we allow time to rest, whether it's active rest or passive rest or whatever, but to go inwards and do those little checks of like, is this still what we want? Are we on track? Are we true to ourselves? Are we building something we're proud of? Is our team supported because we can be the leaders we want to be? Are we the mothers we want to be? Are we the partner? Are we, you know, are we the people we want to be? And it really helps that we have each other and that we're on this journey together. And you should see our WhatsApp chat is basically a list of podcasts. Like, you listen to this and this is amazing and I feel so seen. And but again, I think that's one of the amazing things of building this, that I think you have to work on yourself, like, because you are just pushed to your limits so much that you can't. It's a house of cards otherwise, I think.
Yeah, totally. What do you want people to say about you when you leave the room?
Oh. Oh, well, I would like, oh gosh, I would hope that if people have seen me in any capacity online, that they would say, I love that she comes across exactly as she puts herself out there. That would be really comforting to me.
Yeah. Down to earth and real. And sometimes when we've done talks, people come up to us and say, oh, I feel really inspired. And that's really humbling, because we both feel, you know, we did this with blood, sweat and tears. You know, there was no secret formula. There was no big investment or this incredible mentor who did this for us or introduced us to, you know, coming now that we're meeting all these amazing people who really want to help us. But really, to get to this step, that was our dedication and passion for what we're doing. And for other people, for that to be inspiring, that means a lot, you know, because we can say we did this.
Yeah. What advice would you have for aspiring entrepreneurs, say a woman who's got a bit of a gem of an idea and is kind of wondering if she's got the audacity to pull it off?
For me, it would be ask people for help. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that I've learned a lot throughout this journey, is to open up about what it is that you need, and to trust your friends and your family, probably in the initial stage, or anybody that you know that is in the entrepreneurial space. I mean, the very first 6 months of starting this business, we emailed the former sales director of the company that we were working for, because that was the only person we knew in business who might be able to teach us something, you know? So I would say, go out into the world and look at the people who you need and who can help you, and don't be afraid to ask. Like, literally the worst thing they can say is no. Mm. And the no you have already, you know, so they might say yes and help you.
And I love this quote, and I have said it on other podcasts, and I'm turning into those people always saying the same thing that I am. But it's basically, it's this lady, and I can't remember her name, but she said, clarity comes from action, not thought. Mm-hmm. And I love that, because I think especially women, you know, we sit down in the evening with a sketchbook, or, you know, and develop until it's perfect. And then we never launch it because it's never perfect. So we very much just started working on it, and it changed so much. But if we hadn't started, it would never be here now. So to anybody out there who just has that tiny little feeling that this could be something, I just say, start doing it, start working on it, and it will change, it will shape. But if you don't start, it will never develop into anything.
Totally agree. It's one I say that one often as well. Action leads to clarity. Just keep taking the next right step and the path's going to unfold for you. What's been the biggest mistake you've made? Have there been some, like, colossal fuck up along the way?
Well, we've been really lucky a few times with maybe not investing into the stuff that can be really scary, like an insurance broker or a lawyer to do your T's and C's properly. And, you know, that's the stuff when you start out and you put £500 in from your own pockets, that's just not something you think about. But in hindsight, I would say the first big check you get, if you think this has legs, then invest into that stuff and make sure you're protected.
Because your basement flooded, did it?
The basement flooded. And There was another time that we were sued, and you know, all these things again, these are all the things that Lisa and I have to, the shocks that you have to absorb and you have to walk with. And when things like that happen, it's just like, okay, breathing feels a little bit more restricted now. And how, you know, why would anybody do that to us? And how are we gonna act on this, you know? And it can be very solitary. So that's why I mean, yeah, having a business partner for us works brilliantly. I know it's not for everybody, but we say 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2. If anything, it's 11, you know? It's yeah.
Yeah, I've got a client who regularly says that being a CEO is just professional decision maker.
Oh,
And
100%.
the context switching of immediately having to make a decision on suppliers, then to what kind of brand of loo roll you're going to have, or you know,
Yeah,
it's a lot, isn't it? It takes a lot to keep going.
it is. And I wrote a LinkedIn post maybe a few months ago, and it was like, okay, I am decision fatigued. Like, I don't want any more. Like,
And
I'm
my
done.
poor
Tapping
husband,
out.
because I come home and he then, and I'm like, no more. You just decide today. I can't even tell you what I want to eat this week because I can't decide. You know, it just surprised me.
Not biscuits.
Fine. Yeah.
Biscuits for dinner. I think one mistake as well was listening, not listening to my gut, because we worked with someone and it fell off from the start for me, and I didn't listen to that enough, and it turned out to not be a good working relationship. And I should have listened to that gut feeling and had that difficult conversation a lot sooner.
Okay. What's your favorite thing about being an entrepreneur? And are you living the lifestyle that you set up for, you know, being able to be there for the kids?
Oh, okay, that one. Yeah.
What else is there?
I don't know, like the fictional what is it, entrepreneur lifestyle that they will have you believe exists on the social grids.
We don't have the glamorous
No,
life.
it's hard. If you ask me, some days I will say yes, I'm reaching it, and I'm present in my work. And I'm present as a mother, and at other times I feel like I'm failing miserably on both ends and not living what I'm preaching at all. And I think I'm getting better at it, but I think that is literally maybe like a 6 month ago journey that I'm getting better at it. But and that's because we have a brilliant team around us that takes so much of the pressure away now. Because when we say, you know, we work 25 hours a week, that's on paper, you know. And but these days I'm actually trying to adhere to that. And I think if you were to look at our WhatsApp texts from even a year ago, it would be in the evening and the weekend and the morning and and I think we would drive each other crazy sometimes. Whereas now I think the balance is getting better, where we are just, you know, permissionless stepping away and saying, this time is for husbands, kids, ourselves, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. I would add to the bit that I love about it, for me, is the building something, the opportunity and the space to express yourself in a way and trailblaze something that's not been there before, and maybe, you know, touch people on the way who were thinking about it but didn't quite feel they had it in them, and then they see little us and they go, well, if they can do it, then, you know, just the whole showing that another way is possible, even though it comes with sacrifices. But again, if the majority of it works, then then you will not look back and regret it, hopefully. And you will say, I did this because it gave me more than it took from me.
Yeah.
And it definitely does that for me. I mean, as Saskia says, there are days where I'm like, being an employee would be so much easier. But I say that, you know, I spend a lot of the school holidays in Germany, so my family can be with the kids and I have free childcare and I can still do my job. And to someone, it might look like I'm constantly on holiday, but I'm just taking my work with me and I'm making the most of, you know, my family knowing my children. And so it's not always what it looks like on paper, and no one sees the amount of hours you put in after dark. And but again, it's that sculpturing something in the dark that I love about it.
Yeah, and I agree. I think there is so much satisfaction that comes from building something. I'm obsessed with these people on YouTube who show their own house builds. So people who literally dig their own foundations and then they brick by brick they build their own flipping houses, and I'm just like, oh my god, this is insane. And it's like it takes them like 2 years to do it. I'm just like, this is insane, but I love it so much. And I look at different projects all the time because I'm just fascinated by this thing. And then one day I was like, flipping egg. It's like, we're doing that. It's not a physical.
It's a perfect metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I always say, oh, I could never do that. But, you know, we're doing it with this business, and it's just so beautiful to see the developmental phases and the shifts and the changes and taking people along for the ride now with our team. And yeah, it's a hoot.
I'm loving the Yorkshireisms being dropped in. Brilliant. So what's next for the both of you and the Biscuit then? What's coming up on the horizon? What can we expect from you in 2024 and beyond?
Oh my goodness.
So we said to each other, because last Christmas was the first Christmas that didn't nearly break us, because normally Christmas is our busiest time. And every year we go, okay, we need to just get lots of help in. And in the end, it's still us baking and helping till midnight. And this past Christmas was the first, but we had enough people where we planned accordingly and we weren't broken. And it was just such a relief. And we're like, this is more of this, please, you know, just getting the help in we need, even though it means investing, you know, paying people to do that to help us, but it's worth it. So this year we said, let's not spend our time and energy on trying something new and adding another layer. Let's just do what works and do more of it and do it better, even better. Which is obviously our logo biscuits for corporate events and corporate clients, which is our web shop with lovely gifts for individuals. And then it's our events arm of the business, which is the live biscuit printing service that we take to exhibitions and conferences. So we've planted all these little seeds and they're growing beautifully. And we just feel this is the time now to really tend to them and not be distracted with all these other seeds we could plant. And we've got a wonderful team, and we want to make sure that we don't constantly put new stuff on them and confuse them about what we're actually about and what we put our energy and focus in. So we said 2024 is the year where we just optimize all the things that are working well already and do just more of them.
And it's funny because I'm now reminded back to it, and I don't know if you remember this night. It's the night that we met the lady from Bruntwood. I think it was Wendy, but the founder of Neom was
organic.
was talking there. It was really small, tiny little room. Maybe there were like 15 people
in
there.
Belgrave was there, wasn't it? Yeah.
And she said she was in year 9 of her business then, and she said, I feel like we've just cracked the blueprint. I feel like that's where we are. I feel like we've just cracked the blueprint. And so everything kind of is in place for us to nurture and grow it. Because I just remember her saying that and I thought, flipping egg, 9 years? that was so like bad. Our year 2 or something. I was like, God, that's 9 years? But yeah, maybe that's what it takes. I don't know.
Yeah, holding true to the vision, battling through those obstacles, and the two of you have obviously got some magic chemistry between you, and it's but it's true. It's like I work with my husband, and that's a particularly interesting dynamic to work with your spouse. But the two of you have obviously got some chemistry, some integrity between the two of you that is just, it's just really special. And I'm really grateful for you to coming on and tell your story. And hopefully we've managed to inspire some people today, maybe people who are just starting out, maybe people who are battling through a tough time and feeling like they're not getting anywhere. And just listening to your story has given them the inspiration and the hope to try something new or do something differently. So thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
So there we have it. That's all for today. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And thanks for listening. In case nobody's told you today, you're awesome. See you next time.